Welcome to Legal Nurse Podcast, where you will get tips to expand your legal nurse consulting skills. Every week, you'll hear from experts from within and outside of legal nurse consulting. They will share their knowledge to help you grow. Your show is moderated by Pat Iyer, a legal nurse consultant with 30 years experience. So, join our community, sit back, relax, and get ready to learn. Here's Pat.
Hello, I'm Barbara Levin, and I'm joined today by attorney Joe Flores, who is both a nurse practitioner and an attorney in Texas. He has practiced in several areas of the law, including personal injury, traumatic brain injury cases, whistleblower law, and the defense cases in where nursing and the law overlap. Attorney Flores is well known to our legal nurse consultant group because he's been a speaker for our LNC Success Conferences, and we welcome him back. Please mark your calendars for March 4, 5, 6, 2021 as Patricia Iyer and I co-host this third virtual Legal Nurse Consulting Success Conference. Attorney Flores and I will be presenting on the opioid crisis that pervades America. Welcome, Attorney Flores.
Thank you, Barbara. And I want to thank you and Pat Iyer for making these conferences that really increases the knowledge base of LNCs and those interested in becoming LNCs. The opioid crisis is a pandemic that we can't ignore. And because of the damages that pharmaceutical companies have wreaked havoc upon that population, not only in America, but also through companies that are being formed and corporations around the world. The opioid crisis has affected not only those patients and those nurses that become dependent, but also their families, their communities, and the overwhelming cost of the opioid crisis. At the end of my presentation, I want to give people increased knowledge about the ramifications and repercussions of the opioid crisis that may not be discerned just by looking at the numbers. And also, LNCs can expand their practice because there are opportunities for LNCs, not only in MedMal or nursing home, but also the prison system and also the board of nursing in your respective states. We need your help. And I hope that I will contribute enough information along with Barbara that you get the full picture of this devastating crisis. We're excited. March 4th, 5th, and 6th. Please mark your calendar. Join us. And I hope to see you soon. Thank you all and bless you.
My segment of the program, Let's Give You Something for the Pain, Opioid Overdoses in the Hospital. A little of this, a little of that. Nurses in the hospitals have choices in what to administer to their patients. Tragedy strikes when nurses are not paying attention to the amount and the frequency of the administration. What important tools do you need as a legal nurse consultant in reviewing these types of cases? What is the standard of care when it comes to monitoring on these types of cases? You will learn this as well as so much more by attending our conference, March 4, 5, 6. See the link below, lnc.tips/March2021virtual. We look forward to seeing you.
Thank you, Barbara. And thank God that we have this opportunity to teach people about the opioid crisis and much more.
See you then.
Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast, and I have the pleasure of bringing to you Rocky Lavani, who is a person with deep expertise in accounting, finance, and making sure that your business is profitable. He is known as the Chief Profitability Officer, and when we met up recently at a conference, I knew that he had a skill set that would be important for you as a legal nurse consultant to know about. Rocky, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat. Excited to join you today.
Well, thank you. The people who are listening to this show, Rocky, are legal nurse consultants who are sole proprietors for the most part. For the most part, they went to nursing school, learned how to be nurses, and never learned how to be business people. And that's the interesting intersection that we're in of having clinical knowledge and not always being as prepared when it comes to the business knowledge. My show is designed to help people not learn from the school of hard knocks. So I wanted to cover some of those pieces that can be traps for our listener, including the whole financial piece of running their business. Can you give us a little bit more background in terms of the kinds of financial questions that you encounter when you're working with small business owners who are not accountants, bookkeepers, and so on?
So here's the reality. Most small business owners are not accountants and bookkeepers, unless that's their profession, right? And most of them don't want to be accountants and bookkeepers. So when it comes to looking at financial reports, they rarely look at them. And even when they do look at them, they don't understand why they don't make sense. My accountant told me I was profitable. How come there's no money in the bank account? And it's because the reports are designed for accountants and for taxes. They're not designed for entrepreneurs to be able to make wise decisions. And so there's an underlying problem there. And we've actually figured out some ways to make it much easier for the solopreneur, like your nurses, to be able to better manage their cash flow and always know where their money is without having to learn accounting, because nobody wants to learn accounting. My wife's an accountant. I get it.
And I think you touched on a real key phrase of cash flow, and that is a challenge for legal nurse consultants, because the attorneys who are strapped for cash, and we have to learn how to recognize who those people are by how they act, they're saying, well, I'll pay you when the case settles. I don't have the cash flow right now to be able to pay you until my check comes in from the insurance company. That's the plaintiff attorneys. The defense attorneys say, I'm not in charge of paying your invoice. The insurance company is. So the insurance companies, unfortunately, from a cash flow standpoint, decide that the cash flow is important for them, but not necessarily for their vendors. So they may say, we're going to pay invoices every 3 months. And if you get your invoice in the beginning of January, you might have to wait until April, because that's the end of their 90-day cycle. If you get your invoice in March, you might get paid within a month. Can you offer any tips for our listener in terms of how to deal with that kind of a cash flow irregularity?
So a couple things. Number one, up front, I think you should understand how they're going to pay you. Because if you're going to get paid in 90 days, or let's say it's a legal case and it's 2 years, you're not a bank. If you're going to lend somebody money, which is essentially what you're doing, you're lending them money in the sense of your time, you should appropriately price it to match what the expectations are of how long it's going to take for you to get paid. The last thing you want to do is discount yourself and then wait for that discounted money to come a long, long ways away. I think that takes time to build up the courage to say no. And sometimes we have to say no to business because, you know, if it's going to take you 2 years to get paid and you've got bills today, does it make sense unless there's a big enough payout there for you to do it? So I think that's one thing. Understanding how they want, how they pay you, and what are their procedures to get paid. So you mentioned two different people there. You mentioned an attorney and you mentioned the insurance company. Well, insurance companies may have their own procedures of how they pay bills. And if you don't understand their procedures or you don't bill in a way that matches their procedures, it might take you longer to get paid simply because your invoice didn't end up in the right place and in the right format. So I always tell people, make friends with the accounts payable clerks. Mm-hmm. Ask them questions. Say, hey, I want to make sure that you got our invoice. Is it correctly formatted for you? Is there anything else that you need? What are your time frames for payment? And be nice to that person. That person is always getting beat up. The one person who's nice to them probably will get their check before everybody else. It comes back to relationships, right? They'll find a way to slip your check out the door and make sure that you get paid. So I think a lot of it is to have the honest conversations and know where you are up front.
That is such great advice. I used to use my database when I was making the calls, and then my bookkeeper made the calls. We would document the name of that accounts person. We would document the hours that person worked. We would put in our database in the notes. We spoke to Ann at 3:32, and she said, the check is sitting on the attorney's desk waiting to be paid. That type of relationship is really crucial. We got to know who the people were in the insurance companies and the days they worked when they were in charge of approving the invoices. But you made a great point in saying that that individual is often the target of frustration, hostility, anger, you know, all those negative emotions from vendors like legal nurse consultants, doctors, anyone else, accident reconstruction engineers, who are saying, hey, wait a minute, I did the work and now I'm waiting to get paid. And they can get really nasty.
And I like what you said about documenting it, because when you call them back and say, hey, according to my notes, we spoke on this day at this time, and this is what you told me, it changes the tone of the conversation, and it changes kind of that whole dynamic from, hey, I'm on top of my business and I know what's going on and I'm also taking notes, because all these companies take notes all the time. They're always documenting everything. You should be doing that as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And set aside time to do this, right? Nobody wants to do this. I know I'm very lazy sometimes. So what I do is when I have something to do, I schedule it onto my calendar, and then when the time comes, I just do it.
I had a woman in my company, as soon as I got large enough to justify hiring somebody, I had somebody in charge of creating the invoices and making the collection calls. And it was understood that she made those calls on Fridays because those were the days that the attorneys were not in court. They were less likely to be handling a trial because Fridays were days that attorneys went to the courthouse and argued motions. May not be happening right now, but at that time, Fridays was generally a day that the attorneys were in the office if they didn't have to argue any motions. So it was more likely we could get through to them. And that was her routine every Friday and sometimes every Thursday as well. She was spending all day chasing money. Can you offer any suggestions? And I can tell you what we did, but can you offer any suggestions to cut down on the chasing part of the activity?
Find better clients?
Yeah, I would agree to that.
If you have retainers, right, you collect up front. I don't know how easy or how hard that is to do in your industry to get prepaid so that you can bill against that. And the other thing is to make sure that they're happy with the service. So before the bill is due, call up the attorney and say, hey, I just wanted to make sure you were satisfied with my work. There's nothing outstanding that I owe you. Is everything good to go? And because now you're making a positive call, not a negative call, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And this way you can say, thank you. We sent the invoice. You should have it. If there's a problem, let me know. And it's due on this day. And it comes from a much more positive framework instead of a negative framework.
And you said earlier, it also cuts down on the chasing, in the sense that sometimes, and we were guilty of this, we sent in the invoice, we didn't make the phone call that you're suggesting. And then the next response is, oh, well, we didn't get it. It's amazing the number of invoices that disappear in the mail. And we're sitting there thinking, well, you know, it's been a month. Oh, never saw the invoice, never got it. Can you send it again? But if we had made the call that you're recommending, which I heartily endorse, we would have found out before a month went by that the invoice that was payable in 2 weeks was just somewhere, you know, floating around in the Ethernet, just completely missing in action. So confirming that it's been received is a critical point.
That it is. You said there was some things that you did.
Well, what we did, and you referred to it already, is we got an initial retainer whenever possible. There were some insurance companies who refused to give retainers. They considered it to be one of those dirty words. Other insurance companies, however, were agreeable. And we made an assumption when we started the company, based on feedback, that no insurance companies would give retainers. And it wasn't till several years went by, and I ran the company for 28 years, that we realized that not all insurance companies were refusing. So we got retainers from everyone that we possibly could, including some very valuable repeat customers. We still insisted on retainers. But then the replenishing retainer concept was the real eye-opening experience. And it was not my idea. It was somebody else's idea of when the retainer was three quarters of the way used up, that we would ask for another one. And it did require keeping very good track of those key points, making sure that the subcontractors we worked with were notifying us when they had used three quarters of their time that we had allocated. And then going back to the attorney and having the confidence of saying we need to get another retainer and be willing to stop work if we didn't get the second retainer, which was a big point of leverage. The attorneys had deadlines. They need a report. They need to get the expert scheduled for a deposition. Sorry, you have to get your account up to where it should be in order for that to happen. Knowing how to use the leverage was crucial for us.
Did you find, who's usually paying the bills in the attorney's office? Is it the attorney or is it the accounts payable department?
The accounts payable would prepare the physical check, that the attorney had to sign it. Only in one person offices would the attorney be doing both of those functions.
Okay. So making sure that you're in contact with that AP person is definitely important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And documenting those conversations, as we said earlier. And then to switch subjects, this is about the time we're recording this at the end of November. People start saying, you know, in December, should I raise my rates? How do I raise my rates? How much do I raise my rates? I know as we're speaking right now, there's a fair amount of uncertainty about the climate of businesses, about how businesses will do financially. You know, one of the blessings of working in the litigation field is that people want to file lawsuits when times are good, and they want to file lawsuits when times are bad. So it's relatively recession-proof as long as the attorneys are able to settle their cases or get them into mediation. Right now, most of the courthouses are closed. So there's a real dampening down of resolution by trial. But there's a lot of behind the scenes settlements and mediation. So there's still cash flowing. What are your thoughts about raising rates for 2021?
And so prices keep going up. There's inflation everywhere. And I don't think that it's an issue to raise rates. I think one of the bigger things is you should know where you stand compared to the marketplace. But then also, even if two people are the same priced, or people will pay more for services that they appreciate. So if you've got a competitive advantage, you can deliver faster, you deliver with less hassle, you make it easy for your customers, you don't have them having to constantly follow up with you to make sure something's delivered. If you can provide tremendous value like that, then I think you can command higher rates. I know a lot of times people underprice, especially when they're starting out. We don't realize how much people are willing to pay for services. And I don't know, is there within your industry a place that you can go to see what average rates are for different types of work?
No, there's a big concern about price fixing and how that may violate U.S. laws. Mm. So that is difficult to obtain information. Our professional association did a survey on salaries and independent legal nurse consultant rates probably a decade ago. To my knowledge, it hasn't been updated. Mm-hmm. So there's no central location. And it's almost like talking about a dirty subject. If you start talking rates, there'll be people who will just jump on you and say, no, you know, we can't talk about what we charge. That's price fixing. That's illegal. So people are left scratching their heads a lot, saying, am I charging enough? What should I be charging? A dearth of information on that topic.
Interesting. Because I know in some places, it's easy to kind of get an understanding of what others are charging from that. Now, I mean, I wonder where you could find that kind of information out.
You do need to know people who are mentors or coaches or somebody who is more experienced than you, been doing it longer, who will be able to be willing to talk to you on a confidential basis. When I first started my legal nurse consulting company, I know for a fact that some legal nurse consultants called my office and wanted to know what I charged and pretended that they were attorneys. Mm. And I could figure out really quickly if it's SallyJane@AOL.com, which it was at that time. Sally Jane's not working for a law firm. Jane@JaneSmithLawFirm.com would be a person who I would be more willing to share that information with, particularly when Jane says, well, I've got this case involving a guy who was rear-ended and this is what I want you to do. What would you charge me for doing that? That type of inquiry is very easy to say, oh, yes, I'm talking to an attorney, but not, hi, can you tell me your hourly rate? So that gets sussed out pretty quickly.
Do most of the nurses work locally or do they work nationally?
Typically, they start their business locally and then expand nationally. There's nothing that prohibits them from working with an attorney halfway across the country because you don't have to be licensed in that state. And legal nurse consultants who have websites up can be found by anyone.
Well, I was just wondering from the standpoint, because sometimes if you call a business owner who's not in your competitive geography, they're much more willing to share ideas and pricing and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so it takes some investigation to figure it out.
Yes. Yes. So I certainly do agree with that.
And part of your pricing, though, needs to make sure that you're covering all your costs and your overhead. Because too often we just look at the hourly, but there are a lot of, you still have to cover the rest of your costs. Plus, if you're on your own, you're covering both sides of Social Security. So you need to make sure you cover for the taxes that go in there as well. And so I think that's also important to do as well, is figure out all your costs so that you've got a clear idea.
And one of the dilemmas that we experience is that there are overseas providers. Mm. We have listeners in 80 countries. So I'm talking about people who are overseas from the United States. They may offer the same type of service at a fraction of the cost. And then the attorneys who are extremely price conscious will say, I could have a doctor or a nurse in India summarize these medical records instead of paying an American nurse at 3 or 4 or 5 times that hourly rate. I know in your profession, in the financial profession, there are some people who outsource financial services to India and other similar countries. Do you have any thoughts about that process and maybe what legal nurse consultants can say when the attorney says, well, why should I pay you $150 an hour? I can have it done in India for $35 an hour.
You are correct. It is $35 an hour. It'll probably take them 4 times as long to get it done, and the quality of the work will not be up to your par, which means you're putting your client in jeopardy. So if you want that, Rocky, and you want to deal with it, have at it. Good luck. Because I can tell you, it's a different quality of work. It just is. Americans have a very different expectation and attitude. We also have a different timeliness, and there are also language barriers. It's granted there that they can understand, but it's just a different mentality. It's nothing good or bad saying these people are, you know, I'm from India, so I know what it's like to deal with India. It's just different, and you have to have the confidence. Say, great, go to India, have fun. Call me when you want great service.
And most of my listeners know that my husband was born in India and came here when he was 21 to get his master's degree. There is an Indian English, although it's English, but there are expressions and nuances that come through when you're talking to Indians, as I've been doing for the last 50 years since I've been married. I also point out to legal nurse consultants that another argument they can use is that if you have a question about something that's in the report that you receive from an overseas subcontractor, the attorney cannot pick up the phone and say, hey, you know, Dr. Sharma or Dr. Shaw did this summary. I don't understand what's on page 22. You can pick up the phone and speak to somebody in your own country more easily.
How are they viewed? So if you're in a case and the opposing side sees where the work is coming from, do they view it differently?
The overseas worker is not acting as an expert witness. They're doing behind the scenes record summaries or record analysis. So their work is protected from discovery. So okay. The other side would not have any idea that a overseas contractor worked on that case.
Okay. And there's always cultural differences. So I've got to believe, just from what I know, that the quality of the work is probably different.
It is. I had one of my clients who had to take over a bunch of cases for his partner who fell on the ice and fractured his hip on his own property. They were both greatly disappointed that he fractured his hip on his own property because there was nobody they could sue. But that aside, he showed me some of the reports that were done by the subcontractors overseas, and he was very irritated that they had missed something that was significant in the case. And that had profound implications. He ended up hiring my firm to help fill in the gaps, and it was a last minute repair job that was necessary.
So the other option is to also hire your own people overseas and say to them, would you like the overseas? We have a different rate for overseas. I can assure you the quality is not as good, but we'll bill and take care of it for you. Mm-hmm. So this way, at least you have an American contact doing that.
Yes.
And hourly, they don't work at the same speed that we do. It's true. And so you're going to pay a multiple. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to have the confidence and the knowledge to know that. I think a big part of this is the confidence part. And I know for nurses, especially in the way that they're treated out in the working world, meaning if they're professionally working as nurses with doctors, they don't always have that ability to call it back and have the confidence and to say, no, that's not correct.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they are the ones who are correct. They know what's going on. They spend much more time paying attention to those little details and making sure that everything is perfect. And they care.
That's one of the reasons why nurses always appear at the top of the list of the most respected professions. And have
patients, yeah.
Saved a lot of doctors from making mistakes that could have hurt people, especially the new residents and interns.
And that's very true. And more often than not, the patients don't talk to the doctors. They talk to the nurses. They won't say everything to the doctor.
Mm-hmm. You've given us great tips today, Rocky. Can you tell our listeners how they can find out more about the services that you offer?
Sure. So I have a podcast. It's called Profit Answer Man, and we dig deeper into the numbers and how to make cash flow and profits effortless. And my website is profitcomesfirst.com. And then we've also just recently created a new course. It'll be launching momentarily. And by the time people listen, it should be out. And it's going to be how to manage your cash flow without dealing with all the accounting terms and how to make sure that you're always profitable and that you've got the money for taxes and everything else that you need to do. And we'll have a link for that in the show notes and in the comments for this episode.
That sounds like a terrific benefit, Rocky, because this is an area of mystery for many people, including myself, of how do you make sense of those reports? Do you have to make sense of them? How do you make this system as simple as possible and yet still get the information that you need in order to be able to make decisions about your business?
It is. And again, entrepreneurs are not accountants and they don't want to be, right? They want to look at their bank account and say, is there money? Can I spend or can't I? And so we leverage their bad habits. And I talk about that much more on the podcast. And so you'll get a much better understanding of how you do that. Money doesn't have to be scary.
Well, you must have been in my brain when you said that, because it has intimidated me for much of my life, but I have learned how to get around that.
And you are not alone. I would say 80% of business owners feel like you do. And out of the 20% that are left, 15% of them kind of have a clue, but they still struggle. It's only about 5% of business owners who totally understand the numbers and how things work. And so you shouldn't feel ashamed. And the other problem is the accountants all talk in accounting language, which none of us understand, nor do we want to understand it. And so I kind of help bridge that gap. Mm-hmm. I talk entrepreneur with numbers.
Mm-hmm. In my experience, the accountant is not always the best communicator in words. They're communicating well with numbers, but I've had a few who have tried to explain things to me and have not had the ability to explain it in words that I could understand.
And that's a big part of what I do, is that. And the other problem is accountants are not charged with profitability. Accountants are usually charged with doing your taxes. So they're reporting to you what happened, but they can't tell you why, and they can't tell you how to fix it. That's what I do. I tell you why it happened and how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes back to where we started. Price yourself appropriately, right? Don't be afraid to ask for a reasonable return, because people are going, it's a lot easier to lower your price than it is to increase it.
Yes. We've shared a lot of tips today, Rocky. I'll take away for our listeners some of the pieces that I found to be most intriguing, of making sure that when you are approached by an attorney, a new client in particular, that you pay attention to those signals that price is everything to that attorney. And that attorney who starts leading with, what do you charge per hour, before the attorney has even told you about the case, is telling you that price is a deciding factor rather than your experience or the quality of your work. And you can anticipate, based on that conversation, that there could be collection problems. The attorney who says you need to wait until the case is resolved is signaling to you that that attorney doesn't have the cash flow to keep up with the bills and is expecting you to act as the bank for the attorney. And that's a big problem. We didn't mention it, Rocky, but if an expert witness gets on the stand and is asked by the adversary, how much are you charging to be in court today? And the expert says, well, my rate is $250 an hour, but I won't get paid until the case is over, tells the jury that if the expert does a good job on the stand and says whatever the attorney wants them to say, that their opinion can be bought. And attorneys do not want the jury to come away with the impression that the expert's payment is contingent on the outcome of the trial. That's a huge, huge issue.
Interesting.
But when a person is contacting you as a legal nurse consultant and starts asking about your rate, look for a description of the case. Don't give in to people who pretend to be attorneys and are just going on a fishing expedition. But you can, if you identify people who are not in your immediate competitive area, ask if you can have a conversation about rates and see if they'll speak with you. There's nobody going to be listening on that phone call ready to put you in handcuffs and drag you away, even though price fixing and discussing rates has restrictions, but a simple confidential conversation between a couple of people is likely to not get you in trouble. You're not going to get reported to any agency. So be sure that you are charging a competitive rate, and Rocky's suggestion of being clear when you are talking to a law firm after you submit that invoice, make that phone call. Make sure that they got the invoice, the attorney is pleased with the work. There's nothing that would prevent that invoice from being paid promptly. Keep notes of those conversations, the name of the person you talk to, who should become your best friend, the one who can cut the check that goes on the attorney's desk, and all of that will help with cash flow. And then in addition, make sure you get replenishing retainers. I recommend to people that they get a 10-hour retainer, and when that's three quarters of the way used up, to get another retainer and be confident that you can withhold services until you receive the second replenishing retainer, and get another one after that if you need to. Always keeping the attorney informed about where you are, but that will dramatically reduce the amount of time that you have to spend chasing people trying to collect money for work that you've already done.
And I suggest people keep their retainer in a separate account and only remove it once it's been earned, because you don't want to come to the end of the year and you owe a bunch of people money, but you spent it.
That's an excellent suggestion. We used to keep a retainer account that was in a money market back when you could get a few dollars per month, which my husband referred to as catching the float. The mm-hmm. float sunk somewhere in the last decade or so. That suggestion will keep you from getting into trouble when it comes to your own ability to pay other people or entities. And I guess the last point we made, Rocky, is when we talk about overseas assistance, is be prepared when your clients start saying, well, I don't think I should have to pay that rate because I could find somebody overseas who would do it for a quarter to a fifth. As Rocky pointed out, that the quality may not be the same. The communication difficulties are going to be higher. The worker may be slower. So the attorney could end up paying for 4 hours of work when it was something that could be done by you at a fraction of the time. Was there anything that I missed?
No, I think those were the main points. And just price appropriately. I think that is the bottom line. I think that's especially when you're starting out. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, it's learning how to be comfortable with your pricing and confident.
Exactly. And tell our listeners one more time how they can get in touch with you, Rocky, if they have questions or would like to investigate the services that you offer.
So my podcast is Profit Answer Man, and the website is profitcomesfirst.com. And you can contact me through both of those.
Excellent. All right. This has been Pat Iyer and Rocky Lavani. And be sure to check out our next podcast in this series. We also offer the option for you to get the transcripts of our shows if you would prefer to read rather than listen. Those are available on our website. We have a button in the show notes so that you can request those and refer back to them in order to check out the details that you might have missed when you were listening to it. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast and being one of our Legal Nurse Podcast listeners. The show is now starting its fifth year, and we bring you weekly interviews and are pleased to be able to share with you some of those critical tips that will make running your business more effective. Thanks so much. Hi, this is Pat Iyer with Legal Nurse Podcast, and I have with me today Laura Bouchard Chung, who works in a COVID ICU in California. We've been talking in her podcast, and I encourage you to be sure to watch it. You're going to hear a unique perspective. Laura, can you tell our listener who's listening to this on our audio channels or watching this on our YouTube channel, what are some of the key areas that we talked about in your podcast?
Sure, Pat. Well, we talk about what it's like to work in a nursing unit that is actively taking care of COVID patients. We talk about some of the challenges of getting PPE and how that can affect legal nurse consultants, some of the issues that come up from that. And we've talked about what it's like to be family members and patients that have COVID, and these poor family members that can't be at the bedside. So our challenges with communicating with them.
All right. We covered lots of points in this podcast. It's one that you're going to want to be sure to see for your own sake, for your family's sake, for your healthcare background. And also, there's a whole lot of questions, which we didn't get a chance to get into, about what is the litigation that may be arising in the future related to COVID care, employers, and their policies towards healthcare providers who work with COVID patients, there's a lot up in the air. So be sure to listen to Laura Bouchard Chung's podcast on Legal Nurse Podcast. Thanks so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out Pat Iyer's resources for legal nurse consultants on LegalNurseBusiness.com. Pat coaches legal nurse consultants so they make more money, get more clients, and avoid expensive mistakes. Check out her coaching program at LNCAcademy.com. Please subscribe to our podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Join our community to get notified of each new episode and to receive the transcript of today's program. Complete the request form on podcast.legalnursebusiness.com. We appreciate you and your interest.